question. And in reply to that, then Krishna starts speaking the Uddhava Gita from the 7th chapter only. So today we will actually discuss this first section, which is the main section of the 6th chapter, and about the prayers of the demigods and demigods appealing to Lord Krishna. So we may not recite all the verses in the chapter, but we may recite some of the verses, and then we may some verses I may just give a summary overview. So those who have the if somebody has the book, maybe they can repeat after me. Somebody has the mobile phone, they can repeat after me. Next week onwards, you can give this one. Next week we'll be distributing the notes for the whole Uddhava Gita, the spiral bound this one. Shri Shuka Uvacha. Ata Brahmatma Jai Devai.
Ata Brahmatma Jai Devai.
Prajeshair Avrutobhyagat.
Prajeshair Avrutobhyagat.
Bhavascha Bhuta Bhavyesho.
Bhavascha Bhuta Bhavyesho.
Yayau Bhuta Ganair Vrataha.
Yayau Bhuta Ganair Vrataha.
Can read the translation.
Shri Sukadeva Goswami said, Lord Brahma then set off for Dwarka, accompanied by his own sons as well as by the demigods and the great Prajapatis. Lord Shiva, the bestower of auspiciousness to all living beings, also went surrounded by many ghostly creatures.
So, if you see, at the time of Krishna's appearance also, the earth was overburdened by the demonic population. So, at that time, all the demigods headed by Lord Brahma, they actually went to the shore of the milk ocean. And Lord Brahma offered meditate upon the Supreme Lord, and then the Supreme Lord actually gave message to Lord Brahma, and the Brahma conveyed that message to the demigods. And then when actually Krishna appeared in the womb of Devaki, so at that time also all the demigods came to the prison house of Kamsa, and then they offered beautiful prayers. So now Krishna's disappearance pastime is going to happen. So therefore now all the demigods, they are coming to Dwaraka. Just like they came to Mathura at the beginning of his pastimes, at the end of his pastime they are also coming to Dwaraka, and in order to actually take darshan of the Lord, and in order to offer prayers to the Lord. So now then the second to fourth verse, so Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, the different Prajapatis and the demigods, Lord Shiva is accompanied by his associates, Lord Brahma is accompanied by his sons, the four Kumaras and different sages, they come to actually meet Lord Krishna. So second to fourth verse, these three verses describe the different personalities who came along apart from Lord Brahma. So the Maruts, Adityas, these are all actually different demigods, and Ashwini Kumaras, Angira Rishi, and the different Rudras, Vishwadevas, the Sadhyas, Gandharvas, Apsaras, Siddhas, Charanas, and the forefathers, the residents of the Vidyadhara Loka, Kinnara Loka, they all actually came. And it is described, Dwarakam Upasanjagmu Sarve Krishna Didrikshavaha. So all of them, they came to Dwaraka Upasanjagmu Sarve Krishna Didrikshavaha with a desire to see Krishna, hoping to see Lord Krishna. Didrikshavaha means with a desire to see Krishna. And what is the nature of Krishna's form? Vapusha Yena Bhagavan Nara Loka Manoramaha Yasho Vitene Lokeshu Sarva Loka Malapaham. So these two lines describe the nature of Krishna's form and nature of Krishna's fame. So they, all of these personalities, they came with a desire to see Krishna, And that Krishna, he enchanted all the human beings by his wonderful form. Sarve nara loka manoramaha. The Supreme Lord, by his transcendental form, he enchanted the minds of all the living entities. They came to look that particular form. And then, what is the nature of Krishna's activities? What is the nature of Krishna's fame? Yasha yasho vitene lokeshu sarva loka malapaham. So Krishna, by spreading his fame, he actually he destroyed the contamination of the whole universe. Sarva loka mala apaham. So they came to see that particular form of Krishna. So here we see that actually the demigods, they were accustomed to seeing different Vishnu expansions in the heavenly planets. Like Lord appeared as Vamanadev in the heavenly planets. So they had seen different other forms of the Supreme Lord as Vamanadev, Krishnigarbha, etc. But this particular form, the original form of Lord Krishna, because that is so special, so therefore the demigods were especially eager to have darshan of this particular form. So they came to Dwarka. And another thing which is mentioned is that, what is the nature of the speciality of Krishna's form? So Krishna, in the nature of Krishna's form is that, like his form is, his body is non-different from his soul. His body is non-different from himself, unlike the living entity. So that is the nature of Krishna's transcendental form. And one may say that another beautiful point which I explained is that Krishna, by spreading his fame, he actually destroyed the contamination of the whole universe. We can see, like, especially by the different like propaganda by the materialists in the, through different media and different newspapers, etc. Like, they actually contaminate the minds of different people. So if you have to destroy the contamination, the simple thing is that we have to actually spread Krishna consciousness. Sarva loka viteneshu yasho vitene lokeshu sarva loka malapaham. So the Lord's glories destroy all contamination within the universe. And then the next verse described the city of Dwaraka. Dwaraka was actually filled with all the opulences. And so these demigods, they came there with unsatiated eyes. They beheld with unsatiated eyes the wonderful form of Lord Krishna. So then the sixth verse describes that when the demigods appeared here, the demigods came to Dwaraka, they also brought a garland from the gardens of the heavenly planets. When you go to meet a great person, you should actually take something. Especially when you meet the Supreme Lord, we should actually always we offer some flower or some fruits or something for the Lord. So they brought a garland made from their own garden. They brought a garland made from the flowers from the of their own garden from the heavenly planets. And then they started offering beautiful prayers, which were filled with the charming words and which were filled with the charming ideas. Like sometimes like people speak in a charming way with different phrases and different figures of speech, but there may not be much substance in that. And somebody may have the substance, but then he may not have the ability to speak in a sweet manner. He may not have the ability to speak with different phrases and figures of speech, etc. But the demigods they offered beautiful prayers which contained charming words and charming ideas. So the demigods, they brought the garland grown organically from their garden, and then they offered prayers with charming words and charming ideas. So now from the 7th till the 19th verse, these 13 verses contain the prayers of the demigods. So if you see in the Srimad Bhagavatam, There are different sections in the Bhagavatam which contain the prayers of the demigods to different forms of the Lord. Like for example, I think third canto, right from the like beginning, the third canto, I think sixth or seventh chapter, I forget. There the prayers of the demigods are there. They pray to the Supreme Lord for the purpose of creation in order to perform their duties. The third canto contains that. And then sixth canto contains the prayers of the demigods in the story of Vritrasur. So the demigods were actually defeated by Vritrasur, and then the demigods actually offer prayer to the Lord. Any other section, does anybody remember where the prayers of the demigods are there? The seventh canto, after Narsingh Dev killed Hiranyakashipu, then the different demigods, they offer prayers to Narsingh Dev. Does anybody remember where else any? Eighth canto also contains prayers to the demigods. Before the Samudra Manthan, when the Indra insulted Durvasa Muni, and then Indra lost all his opulences. So at that time the demigods, they actually go to approach the Lord. There's a prayer section, there are prayers. Any other section? After Daksha Yajna, the fourth canto, sixth chapter, when the Daksha Prajapati, after he performed the second sacrifice, the Lord appears and then the demigods offer prayers. After Bali Maharaj is defeated by the Lord, short section of prayers, short section of prayers is there. And then in the fifth canto also, the demigods, in one sense they glorify Bharat Varsha, but we can say it's like a,
every
prayers.
Offering different prayers, right?
The demigods glorify Bharat Varsha. And of course, the 10th canto contains the prayers of the demigods. 10th canto, 2nd chapter, when Krishna appeared in the womb of Devaki, all the demigods come to the prison house. This like this way, like different sections contain the prayers of the demigods. So here also, now the last section, the whole Bhagavatam, which contains the prayers of the demigods, is here, 11th canto, 6th chapter. So we'll try to touch upon the main points of these prayers. So we'll recite this verses. Shri Deva Uchuhu,
Shri Deva Uchuhu,
Natasmate Nata Padaravindam,
Natasmate Nata Padaravindam,
Buddhindriya Pranamano Vachobi,
Buddhindriya Pranamano Vachobi,
Yachintyatentar Hridibhava Yuktair,
Yachintyatentar Hridibhava Yuktair,
Mumukshubikarma Mayoru Pashad,
Mumukshubikarma Mayoru Pashad.
Or as a book, they can read.
The demigods began to speak. Our dear Lord, advanced mystic yogis, striving for liberation from the severe bondage of the material world, meditate with great devotion upon your lotus feet within their hearts. Dedicating our intelligence, senses, vital air, mind and power of speech to your Lordship, we demigods bow down at your lotus feet.
So here, the demigods, they immediately offer obeisances to the Supreme Lord. The demigods are saying, Yat chintya tentar hridi bhava yuktair mumukshubi karma mayoru pashat. So they are saying that mumukshubi, those who are desiring liberation, the advanced mystic yogis, they meditate upon your lotus feet. For what purpose? Karma maya urupashat. In order to get freedom from the great bondage of karmic activities or fruitive activities. Karma maya urupashat. In order to get freedom from this great bondage, they actually meditate upon your lotus feet from their heart, bhava yuktair, from their heart. So natasma te nata padaramidam, we offer obeisances to that lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, which is being meditated upon by the mystic yogis. And we offer obeisances to the lotus feet of the Lord by dedicating our buddhi, indriya, prana, mana and vachobi. So when you read Srimad Bhagavatam, as you go through, this course, we should try to, we should try to actually develop the translation of the verse. Of course, the translation is there. But then when you read the word-to-word translation, like when you are reading the translation, suppose, like which line is speaking the which Sanskrit verse. So it's at least the advantage of being in India is that many of these words are actually familiar to the Indians. Like buddhi, indriya, mano, vacho. There may be some of the words which may not be actually familiar to us. But the word-to-word translation helps us to actually to become familiar with those words. So when you read the verse, you should become like by reading the verse, we try to develop the translation. The sense, first we, when you read the word-to-word translation, you can get the understanding, and then when you read the verse, you can try to develop the translation. Like for example here, yet chintyate means thinking or meditating. Yat chintyate antar hridi bhava yuktai mumukshubi. Mumukshu means, this may be a new word, but then if you are reading Bhagavata, mumukshubi means like those who are desiring liberation. Karma maya urupashat. The word urupasha means like some noose or it's a bondage. So urupashat means like great bondage. What great bondage? Karma maya. That means the reactions of fruity work. So mumukshubi karma mayor pasha, those who are desiring liberation from this great bondage. Yat chintyate, they meditate with their heart. Kriti bhava yukte, from their heart, upon the lotus feet of the Lord. To that lotus feet of the Lord, what do we do? Natasma. Nata means we offer obeisances. So sma is used because the plural, because deva vuchuku, all the demigods are offering prayers. So therefore, otherwise if there is a singular person, natosmi, like that it will be there. So natasma, like we offer, all of us offer obeisances to that lotus feet of the Lord, natha padaravindam, lotus feet of the Lord. And then how do we offer obeisances? It is not that they are offering obeisances just mechanically. They are offering obeisances by dedicating their buddhi, indriya, their intelligence, the senses, life here, mind and their words. So here is a purport in which, like, what is the definition of a dandavat? Like many times we say, I offer my dandavat, or we tell them by words, but what is actually the definition of a dandavat, which is actually explained in this particular verse? So dandavat is something which is offered with eight limbs. What are the eight limbs? The first is two legs, it's considered one limb, two hands, and the knees, the two knees, chest, and eyes, and our heart, the two knees, chest, head, eyes, mind, and the power of speech. So that means, like while offering dandavat, we are also many times our mind also should be thinking of the Lord, and then we also pronounce some mantras, like Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Krishnaya Bhuta. Like power of speech is also actually offered. We offer also words in glorification. So there is actually dandavat. So here, Srila Hridayananda Maharaj writes here, the currents of the material nature are very powerful, and one should therefore cling tightly to the lotus feet of the Lord. So that is why it is mentioned Urupashad. And when the demigods, they came to Dwaraka with a desire to see Krishna. And then they got the darshan of Krishna and they are offering dandavats. So when they got the darshan of Krishna, they were actually greatly astonished, because they felt themselves to be actually unqualified. So therefore, in great astonishment, they are using the word natasma. Sma means they are greatly astonished that they were feeling that the mystic yogis who perform different yogasanas, they are only able to contemplate upon the lotus feet of the Lord in their heart. But we were able to get darshan of the lotus feet of the Lord. So therefore, they were actually greatly astonished. So with that, in that astonishment leads to humility, so therefore they offer dandavat. And by dedicating their mind, intelligence, etc.
This one says that they tightly cling down to the lotus feet. Same thing is there in second hand. Brahma says that I will not fall down because I am tightly holding your lotus. What does that exactly mean?
Brahmaji says like Na Bharati Menga Mashopalakshyate. Brahmaji is saying that, so because I have caught hold of the lotus feet of the Lord, my words never prove turn out to be false. My mind never falls down. So in this sense, lotus feet means it represents actually devotional service. Engaging in one of the nine processes of devotional service.
Intensely, right? Tightly means, I think,
Divrena
Bhakti, right?
Yeah.
Intense Bhakti is
putting our heart into practicing devotional service, yes. Of course, there is one of the limb of 64 items is touching our head to the lotus feet of the deity. It's like physically touching one of the items of sadhana bhakti. But when generally taking shelter of the lotus feet means like engaging in the devotional service.
The question that in 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna speaks to Arjuna when he showed after Narayan form, 300 form, that this roof is so durable even for the demigods. That's my question. The demigods have the power that they can from the heavenly planets also see the what is going on the earth. Can't they have seen the form of Lord before?
No, in fact, if you see, Krishna's form, for that matter, any form of the Supreme Lord, without the actual mercy of the Lord, nobody can have access.
Okay.
You must have heard the story, Lord Brahma coming to meet Krishna.
And Mahavishnu also. They can't have access to see
the Leela of the Lord. Without the Lord's permission, one cannot actually take darshan.
In Chaitanya's answer is, he said when that form, particular form was shown, that is Kala Roop, and that is not seen by the demigods, nor neither anyone sees actually that Kala Roop visually. In a particular sense. And other is, when Brahmaji and actually other demigods, they actually able to see Vishnu, but not
Supreme Personality of Krishna. That's what he was saying. Okay. So next verse. Tvam mayaya, tvam mayaya trigunayatmani durvibhavyam.
Tvam mayaya trigunayatmani durvibhavyam.
Vyaktam srijas avasi lumpasi tad gunastha.
Vyaktam srijas avasi lumpasi tad gunastha.
Naitair bhavan ajita karma birajyate vai.
Naitair bhavan ajita karma birajyate vai.
Yat sve suke vyavahite abirato navadya.
Yat sve suke vyavahite abirato anavyadya.
O unconquerable Lord, you gave your illusory energy composed of three modes to unleash, maintain and devastate the inconceivable manifest cosmos all within your own self. As the supreme superintendent of Maya, you appear to be situated in the interaction of the modes of nature. However, you are never affected by material activity. In fact, you are directly engaged in your own eternal spiritual bliss, and thus you cannot be accused of any material infection.
So here the demigods are saying, the essential mode of the demigods is that essentially we are known as controllers, but you are the supreme inconceivable controller. That's the essential mode of this prayer. So that here demigods are saying, Tvam Mayaya, by your Maya potency, which consists of the three modes of nature, Triguna Yatmani, you actually create, maintain and annihilate. Vyaktam Srijasi Avasi. Vyakta means you manifest this universe. Vyakta means the cosmos. You Srijasi Avasi Lumpasi. You create, maintain and annihilate this universe. And what is the nature of this universe? Durvibhavyam. You create, maintain and annihilate this inconceivable universe by your Maya potency. And then the third and fourth line, the demigods are saying, Naitair Bhavan Ajita Karmabir Ajyate Vai. So the Ajita means they are addressing the Lord as, O unconquerable Lord. So, O unconquerable Lord. Although you appear to be engaged in so many material activities, Karmabir, but Yat Sve Suke Vyavahite Abhirato Anavadya. But actually, you are not affected by those material activities, but you are absorbed in your own unobstructed spiritual bliss. So Abhirata means he is absorbed. Like we read the word translation. You are always absorbed in what? Swasuke. Swasuke means in your own internal transcendental pleasure. You are always absorbed in a transcendental pleasure. So and another word which they use is like anavadya. So therefore, you are actually a faultless Lord. You are unimpeachable. So in the Hridayan Maharaj writes that how the Supreme Lord is actually freed from the mode of goodness. He is not affected by the mode of goodness. He is not affected by the mode of passion. And he is not affected by the mode of ignorance. The Lord is never materially ignorant. Therefore, he never exhibits cruelty, laziness, foolishness, blindness or material intoxication. So, one thing, when you read the purports, because you are expected to read, when you read the purports, you must know, like when you are reading this first paragraph, like what actually they are trying to explain. Usually, if you see, the particular line or particular word is being explained in the purport in a particular this one. So otherwise, sometimes we just reading, we may think that I have read, but then I don't feel like I have read something. Like it all appeared same. We may think like why this line is written here? Why this line is written here? You may think like may get confused. But when you try to carefully go through, like certain lines in the purport, they concentrate on certain words of the verse. And certain lines in the purport, they actually relate to the certain words of the verse. That's how the purports are written. And then, sometimes the same words, they try to actually explain in the modern context, in the present context, they extend to the application point of view. But otherwise, if you see, like for example, the word Durvibhavyam means like inconceivable. So here it is mentioned, even the material universe is inconceivable. Durvibhavyam Vyaktam. You have created this inconceivable universe. So, if the material universe itself is inconceivable, like we see, the word Achintya or inconceivable used in relation to the soul, the super soul, it is also used in relation even to the material universe. It's also inconceivable. The soul is also inconceivable. And even more inconceivable is actually the super soul. And even more is actually the supreme personality of God. So, all these are inconceivable. So then Prabhupada explains the word anavadya. So the word anavadya also comes many times in the Bhagavatam. Anavadya means faultless or unimpeachable Lord. So here he explains the word faultless in the sense that how the Lord is not affected by the mode of goodness, passion and ignorance. He is not, he is free even from the material mode of goodness because he never attempts to peacefully enjoy the material world with a sublime materialistic mentality. So those who are infatuated by mode of passion, they try to enjoy the material world in a passionate way. And those who are affected by mode of goodness, they try to enjoy the material world in a peaceful way. But the Lord is actually freed even from the material mode of goodness. So that is what is explained. And of course, the second paragraph concentrates upon this word. Yat sve suke avyavahite abhirato. Although you are actually completely involved in these activities of creation, maintenance and annihilation, but actually you are completely unaffected and you are absorbed in enjoying your transcendental bliss in an unobstructed manner. Avyavahite means, like abhirata means absorbed. Absorbed in what? Sve suke. In your own transcendental pleasure. And in what way? Avyavahite. Avyavahite means like without any obstruction. Without any obstruction. So, like for example, if you have learned this word, avyavahite. So, next time when you are reading the verse, like, you may remember, oh, this word I remember this. So, like that you can easily understand the translation. So the second paragraph concentrates upon this particular phrase, and Hridayananda Maharaj is explaining how in the spiritual world the Lord is relishing the inconceivable loving devotion of his innumerable associates. The Lord is being embraced and is embracing. He is joking and is hearing the joking of his loved ones. So like that he explains the activities of the Lord in the spiritual world. So next verse.
Similar thing is there, but I just wanted to clarify that in 8th canto, Gajendra prays, he says, Analaya. There also, like, he is always busy to deliver the day and night, he is busy to deliver. Is it different from
Madhrik Prapanna Pashupasha Vimokshanaya Muktaya Bhuri Karunaya Namo Layaya? Layaya means, like, Lord is never, he is always busy, he is like, he is never lazy, he is always actively trying to actually help the living entities. That's a different word, Laya. Yeah. So next verse. Shuddhir nirnam natu tate dya durashayanam.
Shuddhir nirnam natu tate durashayanam.
Vidya shruta dhyana dana tapakriyabhi.
Vidya shruta dhyana dana tapakriyabhi.
Sattvatmanam rishabate yashasi pravriddha.
Sattvatmanam rishabate yashasi pravriddha.
Satshraddhaya shravana samvrutaya yatasyat.
Satshraddhaya shravana samvrutaya yatasyat.
O greatest of all, those whose consciousness is polluted by illusion cannot purify themselves merely by ordinary worship, study of Vedas, charity, austerity and ritual activities. Our Lord, those pure souls who have developed a powerful transcendental faith in your glories, achieve a purified state of existence that can never be attained by those lacking such faith.
So in this verse, the demigods, what do they say is that Shuddhir, they essentially mention two points. They are saying purification of the heart does not take place by processes like study of the Vedas or performing rituals or tapasya or charity, etc. Purification of the heart does not take place in these processes. And how a person can actually be purified? Yeah, purification actually takes place by hearing and chanting your glories with the transcendental faith. So what are the processes? What is the process which actually purifies the heart? The same thing is actually emphasized by saying, these processes do not purify. So in the positive way and the negative way. So that's what is mentioned. The first two lines talk about Shuddhir Nirnam Natu Tatedya Durashayanam. Durashayanam means like those whose consciousness is contaminated. Those whose consciousness is contaminated, they cannot be purified by Vidya, Shruta, Adhyayana, Dana, Tapa, Kriya. Like study of the scriptures or simple study of the Vedas or charity, tapasya, performing rituals, etc. And they are addressing the Lord by the word Sattvatmanam Rishabha. Rishabha means the greatest of all. A Sattvatmanam Rishabha, it means that you are the best among all people who have Shuddha Sattva bodies. You are the best of the avatars who are the Shuddha Sattva body. All the avatars, they have the Shuddha Sattva body. Shuddha Sattva means like the body is in the platform of, it's not contaminated by any of the three modes. But even among the all the avatars who are the Shuddha Sattva body, you are the Rishabha, you are the best amongst them. Sattvatmanam Rishabhate Yashasi Pravruddha. And then Sat Shraddhaya Shravana Sambhritaya Yatasya. Sat Shraddhaya, by transcendental faith. And what? Shravana Sambhritaya, by hearing and chanting your glories, a person can be completely purified. Transcendental faith. So what is actually transcendental faith? So transcendental faith means it has got basically two characteristics. One is exclusive dedication to Krishna and complete dependence on Krishna. Exclusive dedication to Krishna, that means that a person has the faith that simply by serving Krishna, all the demigods will be taken care of. You do not have to separately please somebody. I do not have to separately worship somebody. We respect everyone. But simply by worshipping Krishna, I don't have to please anybody else. That is one characteristic of transcendental faith, exclusive dedication. And second characteristic is that complete dependence on Krishna. That means like by serving Krishna, to have the faith that my needs will also be taken care of. Like watering the root of the tree, watering the, by feeding the stomach, hand will also get nourished. Or by watering the root of the tree, having the faith that water will reach all the parts of the tree. These are two characteristics. So we see the different processes, all these processes are actually different pious processes, like study of the Vedas, etc. But these processes are like, in one place it is explained, they are like actually if you want to purify a gold, and if you wash the gold, some impurities will go, but then all the impurities will not go by washing the gold. So these processes, they may purify to some extent in the form of at least a person can avoid the reactions, etc., or maybe to some extent some disease may go. So the root of the disease may not go, the ignorance will not go. They just purify only to some extent. They are compared to washing the gold with water, etc. But the actual process for purifying the gold is actually by heating the gold. So similarly, the process of devotional service is compared to actually heating the gold. So next verse. Syanastavangri Rashuba Shayaduma Ketu.
Syanastavangri Rashuba Shayaduma Ketu.
Kshemaya Yo Munibirardra Hrudokhyamana.
Kshemaya Yo Munibirardra Hrudokhyamana.
Yaha Sattvatai Samavibhutaya Atma Vadbir.
Yaha Sattvatai Samavibhutaya Atma Vadbir.
Vyuher chita savanashas swaratikramaya.
Vyuher chita savanashas swaratikramaya.
So here, in this verse, yeah, you can read the translation.
Great sages desiring the highest benefit in life always cherish your lotus feet within their hearts, which are melted by love for you. Similarly, your self-controlled devotees, desiring to cross beyond the material kingdom of heaven to achieve opulence equal to yours, worship your lotus feet in the morning, at noon, and in the evening. Thus they meditate upon your lordship in your quadruple expansion. Your lotus feet are just like a blazing fire that burns to ashes all the inauspicious desires for material sense gratification.
So here, the demigods are saying the first two lines of this verse. Syanas tava angri. Tava is like your lotus feet. So first two lines describe the demigods are mentioning that your lotus feet is worshipped by it is worshipped by the great munis, great sages, for getting the highest benefit. Kshemaya. Kshemaya means like for getting the highest benefit. So they worship the great sages, they worship your lotus feet for getting the highest benefit. In what way they worship? Ardra hridokhyamana. That is like an adjective. It describes the attitude in which they worship. Ardra hridokhyamana means like with melted hearts. Like with melted hearts, they actually worship the Supreme Lord. They worship your lotus feet for highest benefit. And then the second line, the third line they mention that your worship is also worshipped by Satvatais. Satvata refers to devotees. Like one of the name of the Lord is Satvatampati. The Lord of the Satvatas. It can refer to Yadavas. In one sense it refers to devotees. Your worship, your lotus feet is also worshipped by devotees. And what do they worship your lotus feet for? They worship your lotus feet for Sama Vibhutaya Atma Vadbir. They worship your lotus feet for Sama Vibhutaya. Sama Vibhutaya means they worship your lotus feet with a desire to get opulence equal to you. Vibhuti means opulence. They worship your lotus feet, they desire to get opulence equal to you, in the sense getting the same features of the Lord, or getting the Salokya, Sarshti, Samipya, Sarupya, getting the same opulences like the Lord. So they worship your lotus feet for this purpose. And and what is, there is another phrase which is used to actually describe the lotus feet of the Lord. Dhuma Ketu. Your lotus feet is like a Dhuma Ketu. Ashubha Ashaya Dhuma Ketu. Dhuma Ketu is like a, Dhuma Ketu means a comet, a flaming comet or fire. So which represents Lord Shiva. In the sense that your lotus feet can actually destroy everything, all the inauspicious desires, Ashubha Ashaya. All the inauspicious mentality can be actually destroyed by your lotus feet. So then they mention that, but what we worship your lotus feet for, we worship your lotus feet in order to be freed from the desire to enjoy. And third and fourth line also describe the nature of how the devotees worship his lotus feet. They worship your lotus feet three times a day, Savanashaha. They worship your lotus feet three times a day. They worship all these four forms of the Lord, Vasudeva, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, Aniruddha, Vyuha. So Vishnu Chakravarti gives an additional meaning. He says Sama Vibhutaya means these devotees worship your lotus feet to get an opulence equal to you, or they worship your lotus feet in order to, with a desire to get prema towards you. The desire to get prema for you. And what is the nature of such devotees who worship your lotus feet for prema? So such devotees, they see heaven, liberation and hell equally. So if you take the word Sama, Sama Vibhutaya, it can mean that they worship your lotus feet to get opulence equal to you. Or it can mean that those people who see heaven, liberation and hell equally as summer, say they worship your lotus feet for vibhutaye, for the purpose of vibhutaye, for the purpose of getting prema. So, but we worship your lotus feet for what purpose? For giving up the desire for swarga, for giving up the material desires. So that is the purpose here. So, next verse.
How can devotees worship for the opulence equal to?
How can devotees actually worship the Lord? The desire to get opulence like the Lord. Any answer here?
Even if I offer them this, they don't want it. By that they will get that. Devotees don't desire Sarukya Shastri Samyukta.
Yeah, the same purpose is explained. Devotees may accept these different opulences if it is actually favorable for their service. Like, in the sense, they may there are different grades of devotees also then, sense. One may desire these opulences if they think that like this will be a better opportunity for me to render service to the Lord. So he may desire that. And if there is no service to the Lord, even by going to the spiritual world, then a devotee does not desire that. So that's what the Kapil Dev says. Salokya Sashti Samyakya.
There
are many prayers like that. When we read these prayers, we must know that we must always keep in mind, because actually all these prayers in one, currently the level we are in, like they are all the high prayers definitely. But we must always remember that if we can even develop appreciation for these prayers, our life is perfect. Can't be able to offer this prayer, but at least our goal is that, like, when we chant this, when we read this prayer, we should know that this is like a mantra for me. Like, when they are offering this prayer, they are offering from their heart. Like, for us, it is like a mantra. Just like mantra means we keep repeating, and then we get purified. So we should always remember them. So there are many prayers like Kapila Dev says about his devotees, Salokya Sarshti Samipya Sarupya Ikatam Achyuta. My devotee does not desire even the four types of personal liberation if they are actually not favorable for rendering service to the Lord. Vritrasur says that Nanaka Prishnam Nacha Parameshtyam Nayoga Siddhir Apunar Bhavamva, like that. I do not desire to go to Dhruvaloka or Sovereignty or the Brahma Satya Loka, heavenly planets.
The point is, still they went, like, still Guru Maharaj offered, but then when the plane came, he still went there.
Yeah, next to us. 12th, na?
11th.
यच्चिन्त्यते प्रयत पाणि विरद्वराग्नौ त्रय्या निरुक्त विदिनेश हविर्गृहीत्वा अध्यात्मयोग उत योगि विरात्म माया जिज्ञासुभि परम भागवतै परिष्ट
Those about to offer oblations into the fire of sacrifice in accordance with the Rigveda Yajur and Samvedas meditate on your lotus feet. Similarly, the practitioners of transcendental yoga meditate upon your lotus feet, hoping for knowledge about your divine mystic potency. And the most elevated pure devotees perfectly worship your lotus feet, desiring to cross beyond your illusory potency.
So here demigods are saying, you are worshipped not only by devotees, even by performers of karma and jnana. Even by performers, even by those people who follow the path of fruitive activities, karma, and who, even those people who follow the path of jnana marga, philosophical speculation. So the first two lines describe that, like, traya nirukta, those who, many people who follow the practice of ritualistic sacrifices, they execute different sacrifices by following the rules mentioned in the three Vedas. And they also worship you, they also meditate upon your lotus feet. And those who are, the third line describes how the jnanis also worship your lotus feet. But who are the perfect worshippers of your lotus feet? They are your devotees. Parama Bhagavatai Parishtai. The first two lines describe how the karmis also, those who follow the path of karma, they worship your lotus feet. And how the jnanis also worship your lotus feet, that is described in the third verse, third line. And the fourth line, the demigods say, those people who worship your lotus feet perfect, in the perfect manner, they are the demigods. They are the your pure devotees. Parama Bhagavate Parishtai. Perfect manner means how they worship without any material desires. So next verse.
Are they talking about demigods here?
Huh?
Are they talking about demigods? Devotees?
No, yes, they mentioned just devotees.
No, are they also talking about yogis? Because the practitioners says, you know, the one which are meditated upon by
yeah, practitioners of yoga. We can say.
Yeah, they are yoga.
Here it is mentioned Rig Sama Yajur. Otherwise it is not mentioned. Similarly, Bhagavad Gita. Always
Ruk
Sam Yajur Aivacha. I remember some verses. But Atharva Veda is not
considered. Yes.
I think somebody mentioned Aivacha. All these Quran, all these Puchata
Atharva Veda. I'll have to note somebody.
Islam.
We
can do some research.
Let us.
We'll do
this. I have an explanation. It was mentioned that Yajurveda was again divided by Vasudev writing as Atharvaveda.
Mm-hmm.
So originally there are three, and Atharvaveda's existence is specially made by Vasudev a little different.
Achcha.
And that's why it's fourth.
Yes, originally there were only three Vedas. It's included in this Yajurveda.
You can find the exact reference also.
I'll get the reference.
Next to us. Pariyushtaya tava vibho vanamalayeyam.
Pariyushtaya tava vibho vanamalayeyam.
Samspardini bhagavati pratipatni vatsri.
Samspardini bhagavati pratipatni vatsri.
Yaha supranita mamuyar hanamada danno.
Yaha supranita mamuyar hanamada danno.
Bhuyat sadangri rashubhashaya dumaketu.
Bhuyat sadangri rashubhashaya dumaketu.
O Almighty Lord, you are so kind to your servants that you have accepted the withered flower garland that we have placed on your chest. Since the goddess of fortune makes her abode on your transcendental chest, she will undoubtedly become agitated, like a jealous co-wife, upon seeing our offering also dwelling there. Yet you are so merciful that you neglect your eternal consort Lakshmi and accept our offering as most excellent worship. O merciful Lord, may your lotus feet always act as a blazing fire to consume the inauspicious desires within our hearts.
So here, it's a very beautiful verse. The demigods are praying, Pariyushtaya tava vibhu vanamalayeyam. So I mentioned that the demigods, they came, they brought a flower garland from the heavenly planets. and they actually offered in the body of the Lord. So now they are feeling that actually the flower garland which we offered is such a, it's a withered flower garland, but still out of your mercy you have accepted that flower garland. You accepted the flower garland on your chest. But maybe by seeing the flower garland, the goddess of fortune who is also residing in your chest, she may become angry with the flower garland, thinking that, oh, who is this co-wife who is also residing in the same chest? And she may become angry, she may become jealousy, who is this co-wife who is also residing in the same chest along with me. But although she may become jealousy and she may become angry, but we have faith that you will not reject us, because you are actually merciful to, because your nature is, you are so merciful that you will neglect your eternal concern, goddess of fortune, but you will accept, although our flower garland is only withered flower garland, you will accept our garland as the most excellent object of worship. And then they say that, oh, may please consume the inauspicious desires within our hearts. So demigods, one of the common theme in this prayers is that they are actually praying that, so please actually remove the inauspicious desires from our hearts. That's like one of the common theme in this prayers. So here we see the demigods. It's a beautiful, the Prabhupada, Riyan Maharaj writes a very beautiful line. He says that, when can a person actually worship the Lord with love? Yes, unless a transcendentalist completely gives up the impersonal conception of life, he cannot make a loving offering to the Lord. Unless when a person completely gives up the impersonal conception of life, one cannot make a loving offering to the Lord. So here we can see the demigods, they are offering a flower garland. They are feeling that, oh, this flower garland has become withered, but still you accepted it. But actually, anything which is offered to the Lord, it is transcendental in nature. It cannot become actually withered, or it cannot become pale, it cannot get destroyed or something. So similarly, goddess of fortune, she can never get emotions like jealousy or angry or envy towards others. So when they are saying that that goddess of fortune may become jealousy towards us, and she may become angry with us, so demigods are speaking out of actually in a humorous way they are speaking. So they are speaking in a humorous way because of their intense love for the Lord. So this is a humor arising from intense love for the Lord. Why they are able, when will you actually speak with somebody in a humorous manner? When you know, when you have a good relationship with that person, you won't, somebody a stranger, you won't start joking with that particular person. You won't start joking with your principal in the college or something. So only when you have complete confidence in the nature of the particular person. Because the demigods are having complete confidence in the Supreme Lord, and because they are having complete confidence in the protection of Lakshmi Devi and the Supreme Lord, so they are speaking in a humorous manner, in such a way they are saying, oh, Lakshmi Devi may become jealous, and then she may become, she may think, oh, who is this co-wife who has come? So this is transcendental humor arising from intense love for the Lord. So humor, like, last week we were having a, there was this book distribution, the book felicitation was there with Radhana Swami Maharaj. So he had come to address the brahmacharis. So he wanted to, the meeting started before, but he wanted to come, but then at that time some foreign guests had come. So he had to meet the foreign guests in the room. And then he came after the guests left, and then they came. He came to meet us. So he was telling that when the foreign guests, when they were brought to his room, they initially had a feeling that where have these people brought us? Like, they were having a little, they were a little uncomfortable for coming to that room. Like, what is this Swami going to tell us? Like, because somebody just said, oh, why don't you come and meet this Swami? And they just came like that, they were a little uncomfortable in the beginning. But as soon as they came to the room, they heard a loud laughter. Because in the other hall, Gaurnitai hall, the brahmacharis who had gone for bus party, they were telling different stories of distributing books. And telling such a humorous manner, like some of the stories are humorous. So every now and then my devotees were like laughing like so loudly. And as soon as they heard that first laughter, they felt like, oh, what is that? And then Maharaj said, these are our monks who are actually laughing. And then they, just by hearing that laughter, their mood changed. They became completely light. Initially, they were a little uncomfortable. By hearing that laughter, they became receptive to actually hearing Maharaj. Now, will you please instruct us? They came to that mood. Maharaj said, I could actually see that. Maharaj said, that is because of the effect of your laughter. And he said, because like each devotee was telling about his devotional service of distributing books, and other devotees were appreciating the devotional service from their heart. So your laughter is in one sense spiritual happiness coming from the heart, appreciating other devotees' devotional service. And that has actually affected the guests, and that made them receptive. And he said, I was not with you in the room, but in one sense I was more than in the room. I was more than all of you in the room, because I could see the effect of your laughter on the guests. I was seeing the essence of your laughter by seeing the guests, how they became receptive. So in that sense, actually, humor is also, so here they are speaking a transcendental humor which is actually arising from intense love of God. So when Prithu Maharaj is offering prayer, Prithu Maharaj also says that, I want to perform this service, but then Lakshmi Devi may become angry, but still, like, I have faith that you will take my side. So here it is mentioned that it is actually humor arising from intense love of God. So there is not, it's not a humor, it's not mentioned as a humor, but in fact there the emotion is that, like, Prithu Maharaj is in one sense, he is actually disrespecting Lakshmi Devi. So Lakshmi, Prithu Maharaj is telling Lakshmi Devi, Lord Vishnu, that I want to render this service. You remove Lakshmi Devi from her service and put me in that service. So Vishnu Chakra Thakur says, like, sometimes when a person is having intense love of Godhead, such a person, he may externally speak in a way disrespecting great associates of the Lord. When a person is having intense attraction for the Lord, he may speak in a way disrespecting great associates of the Lord. So, is there actually Prithu Maharaj is speaking in a way disrespecting Lakshmi Devi. Remove her from the service, put me in that service. But that is also arising from intense love of God. Internally they have respect towards the person, but externally they are actually disrespecting. But here the emotion is like transcendental humor. There is not even a mood of disrespect externally, but there is a humor arising from intense love. Mm-hmm.
First is like, when I heard from you, then I think that we should not judge the prayers. It may appear like we are pieces. The second point is about the laughter. Bhaktivedanta Maharaj in his book, Swami just said, to get free from the diseases of the mind, laughter is one of the most important things.
So in the next verse, the demigods are glorifying the lotus feet of the Lord in relation to Vamanade. They say that like when you appeared as Vamanadev, your lotus feet acted like a flag pole, because you raise your lotus feet to the topmost planet of this universe and then you covered all the whole universe. Your lotus feet appeared like a flag pole which marked the victory over Bali Maharaj. And then from your lotus feet the Ganges water emanated in three branches, and those Ganges water emanated in the three branches into the three planetary systems. So that was like a banner of your victory. And then they say that your lotus feet gives fearlessness to the devotees, and your lotus feet gives fearful, makes the demons fearful by making them go to hell. Your lotus feet gives fearlessness to the devotees, so therefore we kindly please free us from all our sinful reactions. So this is the offer, the 13th prayer. And the 14th prayer, they mentioned that they accept the Lord as their controller. The 14th prayer, they say that Brahma and other embodied living entities were always quarrelling with each other. Mithur Ardhyamana, who are absorbed in quarrelling with each other. All of us are actually controlled by you. Just like a bull may be very powerful and huge, but still that bull is actually controlled by a tiny rope. Similarly, all of us who are embodied living entities as great as Brahma, we are all controlled by you. So they are accepting the Supreme Lord as their controller. And then they say that Kalasya te Prakriti Purushayo Parasya. You are actually transcendental to Prakriti and Purusha. And Shamna Stanotu Charana Purushottamasya. May you award auspiciousness. You are the Purushottam. May your lotus feet award auspiciousness, best of fortune upon all of us. This is the offer, the 14th prayer. In the 15th prayer, they glorify the Lord as the cause of creation, maintenance and destruction. In the first line, the second line, they glorify the Lord as the controller of the cause of Prakriti, Jiva and Mahatattva. And they also glorify the Supreme Lord that you are the imperceptible time factor by which you actually destroy everything. And you are the ultimate Supreme Purusha, Uttama Purusha. So we will recite the 16th verse. Tvattapuman samadigam yayayasya viryam.
Tvattapuman samadigam yayayasya viryam.
Datte makantam iva garbham amoga virya.
Datte makantam iva garbham amoga virya.
Soyam tayanu gata atmana andakosham.
Soyam tayanu gata atmana andakosham.
Haimam sasarja bahiravaranair upetam.
Haimam sasarja bahiravaranair upetam.
My dear Lord, the original Purusha Avatar, Mahavishnu, acquires his creative potency from you. Thus, with infallible energy, he impregnates material in nature, producing the Mahatattva. Then the Mahatattva, the amalgamated material energy, endowed with the potency of the Lord, produces from itself the fulminant golden egg of the universe, which is covered by various layers of material elements.
So, the 16th verse, they accepted Lord as the controller. 15th and 16th verse, the theme of the 15th, the 14th and the 15th verse is that they accepted Lord as the supreme controller. They glorified Lord as the supreme controller. But in the 16th verse, they say, they glorify that you are the controller of even Mahavishnu. The 14th and 15th verse, they mentioned that you are our controller. The 16th verse they are saying that Tvatta Puman. Tvatta means like from you. Puman here refers to Mahavishnu. Even Mahavishnu, he actually obtains power from you in order to actually in order to create the Mahatattva, in order for acquires creative potency from you, and after getting potency from you, then he impregnates the material nature and produces Mahatattva. So here they declare the supremacy of Lord Krishna even over Mahatattva, even over Mahavishnu. So when you are reading Srimad Bhagavatam, we should try to catch the at least the main, some of the main point in that particular verse. Like here the main point in this verse is that how Krishna supremacy over Mahavishnu is there in this verse. So we can at least, when you are reading that, at least we can maybe write down, oh, Krishna supremacy over Mahavishnu. So suppose somebody wants to know, like, how even, because usually Vishnu, various people think like Vishnu is the source of Krishna. If somebody asks, like, where can you give any statements, oh, Krishna is the source of Vishnu. So we can immediately remember that, oh, is there in the one, this verse contains that. Other verses are also there, but you can remember this verse. So we should try to know what the main point, at least the verse, where this verse can be used for. This verse can be used for to establish the supremacy of Krishna over Mahavishnu.
Previous verse said that you are beyond Prakriti and Purusha. So when you say, I can understand Prakriti, but who is that Purusha?
Here it refers to living entity. Brahma Samhita, that was it. So now,
each incarnation of the Lord is completely independent and as powerful as Krishna. So why is it said here that Mahavishnu gets energy from you to create?
Yeah, in the sense, that is Achintya Bheda Bheda, in the sense. They are actually, in one sense, they are all in the Vishnu Tattva category, but still Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of God. It's like the candle example. All the candles have the same capacity to dissipate darkness, but still there is one original candle which is used to actually light up other candles. So the 17th and 18th verse is that how Krishna is uncontaminated, even though Krishna remains uncontaminated, even though he comes in contact with the sense objects, the senses. He guides the living entities who are trying to enjoy the material nature, but he remains uncontaminated. So that sense, 17th verse describes how Krishna does not enjoy material sense gratification, and 18th verse describes how Krishna does not enjoy even spiritual sense gratification. And then the 19th verse describes, because Krishna is so pure that Krishna neither gets contaminated by material sense gratification, neither does he enjoy spiritual sense gratification. So therefore, the two tirthas, Krishna Katha and the water which has washed the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, they are so pure. If a person wants to get purified, one should come in contact with these two tirthas. So that is that's how the last three verses. The 17th verse, you can read the translation, 17.
O Lord, you are the supreme creator of this universe and the ultimate controller of all moving and non-moving living entities. You are Rishikesh, the supreme controller of all sensory activity, and thus you never become contaminated or entangled in the course of your supervision of the infinite sensory activities within the material creation. On the other hand, other living entities, even yogis and philosophers, are disturbed and frightened simply by remembering the material objects that they have supposedly renounced in their pursuit of enlightenment.
So this verse we can look in two ways. One way is that how Krishna, one way is like this verse compares Krishna with the yogis. Krishna, although he actually guides the living entities to enjoy sense gratification, although he is in contact with the sense objects, he is there as the Paramatma situated in everyone's heart. But he never gets affected by the living entities whom he actually guides to enjoy sense gratification. Although he is in contact with the sense objects, but he never gets affected by it, he never gets contaminated by it. But on the other hand, the yogis, they reject sense objects, but even though they reject the sense objects, even by remembering the sense objects which they have given up, they are not coming in contact with the sense objects, even by remembering the sense objects which they have given up, they become frightened. They become frightened even by remembering the sense objects which they have given up. On the other hand, Krishna, although he comes in contact with the sense objects, he doesn't get affected at all. So this is called as actually like virakti. Virakti means even though a person is in contact with the sense objects, he is actually completely indifferent to it. He is completely indifferent to it. So this verse describes how Krishna does not enjoy material sense gratification. And 18th verse describes how Krishna does not enjoy even spiritual sense gratification. Okay. Read the translation. We'll recite this verse.
Smayavalokalavadarshitabhavahari
Brumandala-prahita-saurata-mantra-shaundai
Patnyastu sodasha sahasramananga banair
Yasyendriyam vimatitum karanair na bibhya
My lord, you are living with 16,000 exclusively beautiful aristocratic wives. By their irresistible choir and smiling glances, and by their lovely arching eyebrows, they send you messages of eager conjugal love, but they are completely unable to disturb the mind and senses of your lordship.
So here it is described that how Krishna does not enjoy even spiritual sense gratification, in the sense that although you are living with so many beautiful queens who have attractive glances, the beautiful features, but still you never get affected by their beautiful features. Like this is a similar verse which comes in the first canto, Uddama Bhava Vishunamala Valguhasa. In the first canto, Krishna enters Dwarka in the chapter. Yeah, very similar verse comes. But they are completely unable to disturb the mind and senses of your lordship. But one may ask the question, but then when Satyabhama asked for the Parijata flower, Krishna actually, like a henpecked husband, he went to get the Parijata tree. So how do we explain that first time in relation to this?
To teach her something, she had that ego, that he belongs to me only. To remove that ego from
her.
Okay.
You want to teach the middle word that how to respect your wife and put to that.
Actually, from that, you know, Rukmini Devotee and Brother Bhakti, see this time, when I went to another Jira Chitran, you mentioned that Satyabhama, she asked her father that Krishna brought it. And then he planted in between the palaces of Satyabhama and Rukmini. And Rukmini also started taking the flowers. Satyabhama got disappointed. Then Krishna wanted to test, you know. Then he told Satyabhama to pour in. He gave a test actually. She couldn't do the test. Then she finally surrendered to Rukmini. Then Rukmini, she by her devotion, she fulfilled the test.
No, these are good points in the sense like to teach that, because Prabhupada says that when a person becomes husband, it's a duty. Manu Samhita is mentioned that husband should provide ornaments, clothes, house to the wife. That's one thing. Any other?
Sripad Madhvacharya explained that maybe seeing that Lord is believed or he is behaving like this, he says that we should always reconcile that he is the Supreme. Is it just to belittle the demons? Like that he says in Mahabharata. And second, I have very esoteric explanation of this. That Satyabhama is leftist. I think in Ujjwala Nirmali or some other it is there. Leftist and right wing movies are there. So in that sense she represents Radha Rani, like some expression there. So that's why he's showing that how the in different rasa the Madhurya rasa is the highest and he's reciprocating with his
Prabhupada gives a simple explanation. He says that although Krishna is sometimes conquered by the love of his devotees, he is never influenced by the desire to enjoy like an ordinary, lusty, materialistic person. And Krishna is actually acting like a henpecked husband. It is not because he was attracted to Satyabhama in a mundane platform. It is actually out of his love towards Satyabhama, he actually went because of Satyabhama's prema towards the Lord, so therefore Satyabhama, Krishna actually went and brought the Parijata flower, the Parijata tree.
Maharaj mentioned in this
Krishna, the Parijata tree, Lord Krishna. Krishna was reciprocating his devotion, like he would have reciprocated with Prahlad Maharaj. Yes, Dravana. Correct. So you can read the translation, last verse, 19th verse. 19th verse translation.
The nectar-bearing rivers of discussions about you and also the holy rivers generated from the bathing of your lotus feet are able to destroy all contamination within the three worlds. Those who are striving for purification associate with the holy narration of your glories by hearing them with their ears, and they associate with the holy rivers flowing from your lotus feet by physically taking bath in them.
So here, now in this 19th verse, so 17th and 18th verse described the how Krishna is uncontaminated because he neither enjoys material sense gratification, that is the 17th verse, nor does he enjoy spiritual sense gratification, the 18th verse described there. So 19th verse is describing two kinds of tirthas. What are the two kinds of tirthas? Krishna Katha and the Charanamrita. So, because Krishna is uncontaminated, these two, if a person wants to get purified, one should associate with the holy rivers and the Krishna Katha. One should associate with these two things. So, here in the first paragraph, Hridayan Maharaj talks about the first tirtha. So, there is a beautiful sentence, I will read that. The bona fide spiritual master describes the pastimes, potencies, and incarnation of the Supreme Lord. If the spiritual master is bona fide and if the disciple is sincere and obedient, then the communication between the guru and disciple is just like nectar, both for the guru and the disciple. Ordinary persons cannot even imagine the special pleasure experienced by the devotees of the Lord. Such nectarian speaking and hearing destroys all contamination within the heart of a conditioned soul, the primary contamination being the desire to live without serving Krishna. So, in this paragraph, he talks about the first tirtha, that is Krishna Katha. And then he says, the Charanamrita offered to the Lord, Charanamrita of the Supreme Lord, water we should wash the lotus feet of the Lord, that refers to three things. You can refer to Ganges, Ganges is the Charanamrita of the Lord. And Yamuna can also be considered Charanamrita because Krishna actually used to regularly take bath. And third Charanamrita is, any guess? Water which has actually made the deity form of the Lord. That is also Charanamrita. So three Charanamritas are mentioned. So, so Prabhupada says that So in this way the demigods offer this 13 prayers. So now I will just summarize the next few, next some of the verses. So then after the demigods offered these prayers, then Lord Brahma, so these prayers are offered by all the demigods. Now Brahmaji is speaking to the Supreme Lord. So now from the 20th till the 31st verse, 20th till the 31st verse describe Brahmaji speaking to Krishna and Krishna's reply. So what does Brahma say? So 21st to 27th verse, in 7 verses Brahma addresses to Krishna. The essential message of Lord Brahma to Krishna is that the purpose for which you appeared in this world, that purpose has been accomplished. So if you so desire, you may return to your own abode. So that is what they say. Just like Brahmaji, when he, in the beginning of his appearance, he actually appealed to the Lord to actually appear. Now he is also saying that now that purpose has been accomplished, now you may now return. So Brahmaji is addressing Krishna by the word Asheshatma. So one may say, Krishna may say to Brahmaji, actually you called for Shirodakshayi Vishnu to appear, because Brahmaji went to the shore of the milk ocean. You meditate upon the Shirodakshayi Vishnu. So you should ask Shirodakshayi Vishnu to actually return. Why are you asking me? So therefore, because Krishna may say like that, so therefore Brahmaji is calling, addressing Krishna by the word Aseshatma in the 21st verse. By that he is saying that actually you are the unlimited personality of Godhead, from whom all the plenary expansions including Shirodakshayi Vishnu emanate. So this is like another verse. What is the main thing, what this verse can be used for? How Krishna is the source of even the Vishnus. So this is like that. And then Brahmaji says that you have re-established the principles of religion, and among pious men who are always firmly bound to the truth, and you have also distributed your glories, so therefore the whole world can be purified simply by hearing about your glories. And then he mentions that you have manifested your unique transcendental form for the benefit of the entire universe, and you have executed magnanimous transcendental activities. So we will recite the 24th verse. Yani te charitani sha,
yani te charitani sha,
manushya sadavakkalau,
manushya sadavakkalau,
shrinvanta kirtayantascha,
shrinvanta kirtayantascha,
tarishyantyanjasatamaha,
tarishyantyanjasatamaha.
Those pious and saintly persons who in the age of Kali hear about their transcendental activities and also glorify them will easily cross over the darkness of the age.
So here Brahmaji is saying, so you have spread your glories, people simply by hearing your glories, they will easily, anjasa means easily, tarishyanti, they will easily cross over this ocean of ignorance, tamaha. So we, the Bhagavatam first canto also this verse comes like, Kova Bhagavatastasya Punya Shlokedya Karmanaha Shuddhi Kamona Shuniyat Yashak Kali Malapaham. Who will not actually hear Krishna Katha, which actually destroys all the contamination of Kali Yuga? Punya Shlokedya Karmanaha, which are worthy to hear. So in this purport, Hridayan Maharaj writes that all the nightmarish problems can be removed as soon as one awakens the transcendental reality of the personality of Godhead, who is eternal, full of bliss and knowledge, and beyond the bewildering manifestations of the material energy. So this purport is about how by hearing Krishna Katha one can actually overcome all the problems. And then now in the 25th verse, Lord Brahma says, you have descended into the Yadu dynasty, and so far you have spent 125 years in the earthly planet, 125 autumns with your devotees. So now there is nothing remaining for you to be done here. So if you so desire, yadi manyase, if you so desire, you may return to your abode. So always, whenever you will see this kind of prayer is always there. When the devotees ask for something specific, they always mention that if you so desire, you please fulfill that. If you so desire, please return to your own abode. So when the Brahmaji speaks like that, then Krishna actually speaks in. Krishna speaks the 3 verses to Brahmaji, from 28 to 31st verse, 4 verses. So this is the 28th verse. अवधारितम् एतन्मे यद् आत्थ विबुधेश्वर कृतं वक् कार्यमखिलम् भूमेर्बारोऽवतारितः.
The Supreme Lord said, O Lord of the demigod Brahma, I understand your prayers and requests. Having removed the burden of the earth, I have executed everything that was required on your behalf.
So we see, like, Krishna, although he is a Supreme Lord, but still he follows the general authorities in this world. So you came and asked for my help, so therefore I came. So now since you are telling that I may go back, so I will go back. Krishna is following the etiquette of, like, following the authorities. So then Krishna is saying here that I have executed all that you actually requested me for the benefit on your behalf. Although I have removed the burden of the earth, but there is one more burden which is remaining, that is the burden of the Yadu dynasty, Yadava dynasty. So that the Yadava dynasty in which I appeared, it is very greatly opulent, and they are very powerful in their physical strength, and they are so powerful that they are threatening to devour the whole universe. And they are threatening to devour the whole universe, and I have also stopped the Yadava dynasty, as just like a shore holds back the great ocean. Ocean may want to enter the city, but then the shore actually holds back the ocean. So similarly, the Yadava dynasty is so powerful, it is like a great ocean. It was actually threatening to devour the whole universe, but I have actually confined the Yadava dynasty only within the Dwaraka. In this way, I have protected the earth even from the Yadava dynasty. So then Krishna says that although I have removed the burden of the demoniac kings from the earth, but if I leave from this world without removing the burden caused by the Yadava dynasty, then the whole world will be destroyed by the deluge of their unlimited expansion. So Krishna is talking about, I have to remove the burden of the Yadava dynasty also. So here, why is he saying that I have to remove the burden of the Yadava dynasty?
Because Yadava dynasty is from Krishna only, so it has got similar power and nobody can defeat them. Only Krishna. So after Krishna left this world, then the Yadava dynasty was destroyed.
But why? Yeah, that is there. But especially it is mentioned, the Yadavas had become proud because of their connection with Krishna. So, they have become proud thinking that, oh, we are actually direct family members of Krishna. And therefore, Krishna actually is mentioned that, because just like familiarity breeds contempt, because of their family relationship with the personality of Godhead, although they were all cultured people, Brahminical, devoted to the Brahminical culture, and they respected the Brahmanas, but still they were affected by the pride due to the relationship with Krishna. So therefore Krishna wanted to actually remove them. And the second reason which is mentioned is that the Yadavas, because Krishna knew that very soon I have to disappear from this world. When I disappear from this world, the Yadavas, they will be so much in separation from me, because of separation from me, they will be maddened with love for me. And usually, suppose when there is a mad person in a family or something, it is it requires a great patience to actually deal with, tolerate that person, still go on. So here he is saying like they will be maddened with love for me in separation from me, and that because of their maddened state, they will become a great burden for the Mother Earth. So therefore I don't want to cause that burden to the Mother Earth. So therefore I want to remove the Yadavas even before they become a burden to the Mother Earth. So Krishna wanted to follow this principle of prevention. 1 ounce of prevention is better than
cure.
Better than a pound of cure. Before that actually happens, that let me actually remove them. Of course, Vishnu Chakravartakur gives an esoteric, he gives a meaning. Actually, Mother Earth will never consider the personal family of Krishna to be a burden. Never consider the personal family of Krishna to be a burden. Just like a wife, in order to please the husband, a wife may wear so many golden ornaments, in order to actually please the husband. But the husband, thinking that, why are you wearing so many ornaments which may be burdensome to you, husband may remove the ornaments just so that the wife doesn't get burdened. Similarly, although the Mother Earth will not feel burdened by the family of Yadav dynasty, but Krishna, out of his merciful nature, he doesn't want Mother Earth to feel that burden. So therefore, Krishna is saying that if I leave the world without withdrawing the overly proud members of the Yadav dynasty, the whole world would be destroyed with the deluge of the unlimited expansion. See, the word uses overly proud. Like last week, that same meeting, Radhana Swami Maharaj was explaining. He said that, like when a person is proud of his ability, then that will cause downfall to that person. But when we are proud as a community, when we are proud of the us as a community, then that pride is actually a form of humility. So, but here what Krishna is saying is that when a person becomes overly proud, so then it will cause a burden. So, Krishna wants to remove that burden. So, I will just quickly summarize till the 482nd chapter, another 5 pages, and then we'll take the registration. So, then Krishna says that, so the Yadava dynasty has been cursed by the Brahmanas, and when the curse will actually come into effect, the whole Yadava dynasty will be annihilated. And then after they will be annihilated, then I will return to my abode. On the way to my abode, I will also pay a small visit to your own abode. Selling to Brahma. So Vishnu Chakravartakur gives a technical meaning. He says that above the planet of Brahmaloka, there is a planet called as Vaikuntha. It's in the material world. So there, the Lord resides in the form of like Vikuntha. So he says that I will come to that planet of Vaikuntha above the Satyaloka. So that's what he indicates, that on the way back, I will also pay a short visit to your own abode. He is indicating that I will visit the planet of Vaikuntha above your own abode, Satyaloka. That is just the meaning he gives. And then when Krishna speaks this to Brahmaji, so then all the demigods and Brahma, they actually offer obeisances and they return to their personal abode. And then, so now the Supreme Lord observes different bad omens in the city of Dwaraka. So when he sees the bad omen in the city of Dwaraka, he starts speaking to the senior members of the Yadu dynasty. He calls the senior members and starts speaking to them. So then he sees the, so he says that our dynasty has been cursed by the Brahmanas, and it is impossible to actually counteract the curse by the Brahmanas. So then he gives actually solution for what we should do now. So he say, Krishna is telling, so we should not remain in Dwaraka any longer. So at this very day, let us go to, at this very moment, at this very day, let us go to Prabhasa Kshetra, and we should not delay even one moment. So here, of course, gives a long purport, which will actually take up the next week onwards. Next week we'll complete this chapter and we'll actually start the next chapter also. So after these 2-3 verses, when Krishna tells to the senior members of Yadu dynasty that we should go to Prabhasa Kshetra, and then he glorifies the nature of Prabhasa Kshetra, how it is a very holy place, and we should go there and perform the we should worship the Brahmanas. Because we have offended the Brahmanas, we should actually worship the Brahmanas. And then when Krishna gives these instructions to the senior members of the Yadu dynasty, so at that time Uddhava approaches Krishna. Because Uddhava was feeling, how can the Yadava dynasty be cursed by the Brahmanas? How can it be destroyed by the Brahmanas? The Supreme Lord Himself is present. And why should we leave this place of Dwaraka, which is much more auspicious than Prabhasa Kshetra? Then he approaches Krishna, and then he speaks to Krishna, and then Krishna starts speaking. So I'll stop here. Kunti Maharani, she was feeling that she basically wanted Krishna not leave the Pandavas.
Right.
But she was feeling, if Krishna leaves the Pandavas, then my sons Pandavas will be unhappy. We will not get Krishna's association. But if Krishna stays here, then Vrishnis will be unhappy. They are also her relatives. So then Kunti Maharani is getting confused, like, should I pray to Krishna to actually leave or stay? In both cases her relatives, her sons are from the mother's side, parents' side, they'll be unhappy. So then Kunti Maharani, she feels, actually what I should pray is, because of a material connection, so therefore I will feel unhappy when Krishna leaves her stay. So therefore she is telling, better you actually remove this actually material identification with the Pandavas and with the Vrishnis. That's what she prays.
But other way, like when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came in this world to do the same, love and become a man after the Lord. Is it a contradictory or?
In the sense of what Krishna is saying, like in the maddened state of love of Godhead, they may, because of separation, it's more like a feeling kind of thing. They may actually act. They may start destroying something. Like one is, like when a person becomes proud, overly proud, then he may become. He may try to capture others, he may try to destroy others. So that is the first reason it is mentioned. The second reason, internal reason, is that because of madness caused by love of Godhead, then they may also act in an unconventional way, they may try to destroy something. So better let Mother Earth not become the burden, not feel the burden of the Yadu dynasty. They may become a burden to the Mother Earth, that's what it is. Yeah, listen, it does not mean that he's not saying that one should not get love of God, because when a person becomes love of God, one will become a burden or something. But it is more like a feeling of the Lord. When a person acts in a person becomes mad, then somebody may be able to relate to that particular person. Why is he acting like that? That person, others may not be able to understand that behavior. The perfection applies. So I just one more this one. So as I mentioned in the beginning, those who came late. So this will be a course in which, like, we will have tests, assignments, and closed book exams. So those who are 75% of the attendance, even if they don't want to have, in the sense, if we are not writing tests or something, then we'll just get participation certificate, provided you have 75% of the attendance. And of course, we don't want to just encourage only participate or something, but we want, we are going to have regular tests and assignments. You'll be kind of evaluated and also be given regularly. So we will be having, say, open book assignments, which you can write at home, and a unit test during the class, either in the beginning or in the end of the class. And we will have closed book examination. We may have two or three, since either after 10 chapters we will have one closed book exam, and then after the next 10 chapters we will have another closed book exam, or after 7 chapters we'll have three closed book exams. So we'll be giving the questions also, but so these things will be taken into account for giving the final, because it's like a course. We want to, it's the purpose is ultimately, like, you should actually read these books. You should develop a habit of like reading Prabhupada's books, and you should develop a habit of, like, say, what are the finer points in this purport, finer this thing, and then you should try to share it with others. You should try to get inspiration from that, and then you can try to preach, use it in others when you try to you're meeting other devotees, or you can use that actually. So you can all of you can read this, and you can fill up it and give it to me just right now.
You write an email and contact
us. And all of you can just write your name, name, initiated name, signature, and email, and contact number. Because I don't have the number of everyone.
Unit test will be every week or fortnightly? Unit test.
Yeah, almost every week we will have. So I will send the next week's questions in the email. What you are expected for the next week, I'll send by email by tomorrow. By tomorrow, I'll send it.
Email is likely to cover which 17 chapters.
So we'll be continuing from where we left off. This chapter will be completed. The 7th chapter will begin next week. So we have completed till the, I think, 31st or 32nd verse.
One chapter in one session, that's
enough. Approximately, because some chapters are big, some chapters are more concepts are there. So, but the plan is at least 3/4 of the chapter or one chapter a week.
Email,
yeah, email. So email can give it, because I will be mainly communicating through email. Through the questions, I'll send it in tomorrow.
Actually, So like how I used to do for the Kshatriya, I can be there and be also. That will be that. Just for 1 month.
Yeah, okay, we'll see. So we can pay the Lakshmi for the course to Ghanshyam Prabhu.
Cash. We have given it at the reception.
Those who already paid, not paid. Those who not paid. Yeah. Right now you concentrate on 6 chapters.
So exam is based on that, sir. 6 onwards. Next week probably go to exam.
Next week?
Probably go to exam next week.
Yeah.
Whatever you have studied.
You have to check your email. In the email I'll mention.
Oh, okay.
If you have to be called.
Email and phone number.
Phone number.
Chapter 7 to 29. That is all part of it. Because Krishna only inherits that. Ilagi, Bhikshu Gita is Avanti Brahmana. Ilagi is Guru Rava. And Pingalas, it is called as. Also, Pingalas related is also called as.
So
that's
why.
Priya Chaitanya
said, you remove this. Priya Chaitanya, you should close it. You should close it. You should close it. Number next week also you can take
thank you Prabhuji for allowing me to continue in Feb. Thank you so much. Though I will be in the midst of Maya at that time, but still I will get it. If you allow me, I will be stuck to my boat. Hare Krishna, thank you.
Initiated?
Yeah.
Okay. So, counselor?
Counselor,
thank you.